So good morning and welcome to Prairie, Labor Day weekend. Little light, but that's good. I'm glad everyone's able to be here. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender, or family structure. We welcome you no matter what your age, your abilities, or inabilities. Later in the service, we will invite visitors, guests, and returning friends to introduce themselves so we might get to know you better. Sunday mornings, we provide a wide variety of services presented either by a Prairie member, a member of the wider community, as we have Gladys here today, or very soon we're going to have our new minister that will be speaking, so to look forward to that. Our chalice lighting today is going to be read by Mary. The Marys are doing chalice lighting.
In este mundo traidor, nada es real, ni es mentira. Todo es según el color del cristal con que se mira. Nothing in this treacherous world, nothing is real or a lie. Everything is according to the color of the glass you are looking through.
I'd like to invite the children to come up front. Gladys is going to tell them a short story.
I want to ask you something. Has somebody ever said anything you don't like about you sometime? Have they said something that you said that's not nice? Have they? Yeah, sometimes even if you're not doing anything, people will say things. You know, for example, let me tell you, I have an accent, right? You know what an accent is? Because if you speak more than English, like with your parents or with your family, sometimes you develop an accent. You have an accent and people look at you and go, it's like my granddaughter. She's 4 years and she said to me, you know, my grandma talks funny, but she's nice. And sometimes when you hear, even your parents, if they come from other lands like I do, sometimes that's what happens. People will think that you talk funny rather than different. And so you have to let them know that. We also look different, right? We look different because we have different colors of the hair and our skin is nice and brown. And so people look at you and go, you are different. But different is good. We should feel really good about being who we are. It doesn't matter what people say. And if people say something that is not nice, you need to talk to your parents. You need to talk to the people that love you. And they will tell you that it doesn't matter. So you keep that, okay? Keep that in mind. Because you are beautiful. Okay? Take care. We'll see you later.
With over 30 years of experience in the public and private sector, what's the name of the Benvenitas Enterprises, Inc., i.e. Gladys and Company, Gladys is a skillful presenter able to develop policies and procedures that improve workplace communications and practices, enhance work-related interpersonal relationships, and successfully bridge cultural differences. When Gladys first enters a workplace for an assessment, she does so with a keen eye aimed at discovering what services and/or training is needed. An expert in U.S. federal laws and regulations, Gladys provides expert counsel in contract compliance, equal employment opportunity, and labor relations, along with expert counsel and training in conflict resolution, organizational development, employee development and training, and targeted marketing. Clients applaud Gladys for not only her ethics, professionalism, and knowledge, but also the sense of levity she brings to her trainings. awardee of the Dane County Martin Luther King Jr. Award and Hispanic Woman of the Year. She has previously worked as an investigator for the Equal Opportunities Commission and was instrumental in developing policy and procedures for the Wisconsin's Health and Family Services as Civil Rights Director. Please help me welcome Gladys. And this water is also for you.
Good morning. Good morning. Buenos dias. It's always a pleasure being here. And being able to be in Madison, Wisconsin, I travel quite a bit these days, all over the place, get stuck in airports and have wonderful rides in trains and all that. But Madison is a very interesting place. And what I wanted to do today, more than talk about the whole immigration nationwide, etc., is talk a little about Wisconsin and Madison. Because Madison is urbanizing. You know, we see the whole issue of the difference between immigration and integration. You know, my belief is that primarily in this country, we're racially integrated but culturally segregated. And one of the challenges that Madison has is that we have inclusionary housing. Is that we have now developing environments in the north side, the south side, the downtown, and those areas that are around Madison and Dane County, where we are seeing more and more diversity, but also more and more challenges. You know, when I do training, I talk about the fact that we are not widgets, we're people. And because we are people, we have cultural tapes. And so sometimes when we see a person who speaks Spanish, and let me give you an example. I was reviewing the capacity of a small county some years ago to provide services to Latinos. And I was dressed casually, I walked in, and the person that was in the front desk said to me, "How are you?" And I said, "Fine." And she hands me an application for food stamps in Spanish and said, "Go sit over there." So I went and sat over there for a little while. And then I pulled my card. And I said, "Actually, I'm the director of the Office of Civil Rights for the state of Wisconsin, and I'm here to do a compliance review." The poor woman just about died. She held on and said, "Just a minute," and run to get the director, who came in with one of those smiles, you know, that kind of like, "Hi there, how you doing, you know? I am in trouble." And said, I said, "Well, you know, can we talk?" So we sat, and I said, "You know, I don't know if that woman was a racist or not. What I know is that she didn't know what to do with me. So my question to you is, have you done the training required by Title VI of the Civil Rights Act so your employees understand what it is that they have to do to address the needs and the issues of every individual that is entitled to receive them?" And what I see in Madison is an interesting thing about immigration. Because if we focus on people who are actually here and not documented, we see different reactions from not only the service delivery areas, but also the folks in general. So the assumptions too are that when we talk about immigration and people who are not here legally, we're only talking about Latinos. And we're only talking about Mexicans, you know. I started with the Community Action Commission in this city 40 some years ago, I can't believe it. I was just kind of counting. And I thought, my God, it's not, I kept saying 25.
You know, and then I go, wait a minute, Gladys, you are 66. It has been longer than that that you were here. But I was bilingual secretary for the Latin American project funded by the federal funds. And it was to resettle migrant families into the Dane County area. My boss was Olegario Diaz. My boss was Mexican, is Mexican, thank God. And I went to him because I didn't understand how some of the Mexican individuals were talking. To me, there were words that were not Spanish, like parqueo, and troca, and tiquete. And that's what I call Spanglish. You know, you get the English word and you put an A or an O at the end and people call it Spanish. And you're like, no, that's not it, you know. So I said to him, that's not in Spanish. And he looked at me and he said, it is now. And that was my first wonderful lesson from my boss, who was an ex-migrant worker, had a wonderful family. And so to assume that just because one is bilingual, we are going to be able to understand the culture, to understand the struggles, to understand the challenges, to be able to know that they are good, bad, and ugly in every group. You know, we were just talking before I came here that there was a shooting in a bar that is generally, you know, has Latin music, and so a lot of the people go. And when I look at what is happening with immigration, I also see this overreaction sometimes. That goes both ways. It goes, we want to help and be good and be supportive of people and bring them into our communities and be able to treat them fairly, with others assuming that every Latino, particularly male, is a bad person or is here taking away from other people. And so what I think it's important is not that we only talk about the community, but you need to understand the community, understand how things happen. The DREAM Act to me is a wonderful, wonderful initial way of addressing what is happening with young people, and in many cases that came here when they were babies. And so let's see what happens next with that, because you have a transition now that allows people, and of course there is a cost involved for people to get those papers, and then we're talking about economics. And where is that, you know, assistance or that help that comes to people that may be already strapped in terms of the kids going to school and they are all doing wonderful, but what is happening to the parents and the grandparents? So when we talk about Latinos, we are talking about many cultures, many people, many situations. Just like with anybody else, you know. This is a wonderful state. When I go up north, you know, you see Native Americans and you see Latinos and you see Hmong. And when I was director of the Office of Civil Rights, I spent a lot of time up north because my feeling was we don't spend enough time up north. We talk about Milwaukee, the most segregated city in the country. And we talk about Madison, who's the most wonderful city in the country. And we share our experiences only from the standpoint of where we live. When we talk about inclusionary housing, you know, you are talking about the fact that there are people now that in the last several years in Madison that are in inclusionary housing, kind of dropped in the middle of neighborhoods, especially on the west side. And so people may not understand the difference between people who are immigrants and are here with papers and those who are not with papers. So immigration is just not something that you can look at with a single look. Like what we read today talks about the different crystals, right?
And so you cannot understand a community unless you participate in that community. You cannot understand what is going on and what are the nuances and the subtleties of our community unless you are part of it. My concern is that if we look at immigration and immediately equate it with people who are Mexican, we are limiting the scope of what we need to look at. There are many, many people from Central America that are coming here, both legally and without papers. There are many people from South America. You know, it's interesting, but when I was talking about working with Mexican Americans, people used to call me güera. Güera is a term that you use for white people, for white women. And so I was the word, I'm going, I'm not. You know, take a look at me, I'm not, you know. Then I just forgot it. As long as they come and ask for services and we can give them, I don't care what they call me except a couple of words in English and Spanish that I wouldn't like to be called. So immigration is important. There is wonderful, wonderful work doing by churches, doing by it being done by activists in the community, done by people that have come together, understanding the issues, looking at the nuances, because if we do not integrate, immigration is superficial. If we only get together to talk about it, but we don't have amongst us people who live it. You know, I can come and translate my community to you. But when we talk about immigration, the folks that you need to dialogue with, to be with, is those that are part of that, those issues. And need to learn their words and need to learn their history so you can collaborate in doing what needs to be done. Recently, I was honored by receiving an award from the Latino community that's it's very, very meaningful to me, called La Voz, The Voice. And what I appreciated was that it wasn't because of my leadership, because I'm not a leader in this community. I try to be, to some degree, the voice of the community. And that's the difference. The majority cannot define who's the leader in these communities. If you want to learn about immigration, bring people that know immigration, that live immigration. Give them the sense of trust and protection where you will have people that may be undocumented that can tell you what they are going through. They are telling you what is that they need from you. And I think that's important. I would be more than willing, as I have done in many other organizations, to volunteer to facilitate a dialogue between the people in the community and you. That is not a speech, that is not a removed presentation about what is going on, but brings the people that need to have the dialogue, and you need to have the dialogue with them so we can understand it. When I'm working with Puerto Ricans, they have a different way of life, a different way of being in this country because they are from this country. When you're working with Mexicanos, Mexican Americans that have been here for ages, there is no immigration issue for them. You know, it's a different experience. When you have Latin Americans like myself, you know, somebody one time called me a souvenir Latina. So I got all the titles, you know, from within and without the community. You know, and so I have to accept the fact that my experience is very, very different. It is not better or worse, but economically, much better. Choices, yeah. But when we look at what we need to deal with, especially right now, I mean, the
politics in this country are very somber to me, and not necessarily just of one party. You know, I think it's important for us to look at both parties and maybe create a third one. I don't know. I've been thinking that that might be the savings. I don't know. But, you know, we have the right to be in whatever party. My concern is that we don't assume that one serves the, you know, better than the other in terms of these very, very critical issues such as immigration. I mean, what is kind of interesting to me is when I talk with Native Americans, for example, in the nations. By the way, when I was director of the Office of Civil Rights and would have gatherings of people of color in different capacities, you know, my issue was I had gotten used to being very linear when it came to meetings. We start at this time and we end at this time, and what's wrong with these people, you know. And I would go to tribal, you know, meetings where, of course, you know, it takes whatever time it takes to get wherever we need to go. And I remember just going, come on, you know, I have the next meeting, I don't know what's going on, and you know, and until somebody said, when you come here, be here. And I was embarrassed because my nonverbals, which sometimes people express when you're talking with people from another culture, or they have an accent, or they don't speak English, and we have to translate, and it takes twice as long, you know. Those subtleties is what gives people the feeling of not being included. They might be in the room, but they are not being included. When you go to where they gather and try to understand how they do things or what they need, etc., it's a much better thing than if you just simply have somebody that spends some time telling you about Latinos. Recently, I facilitated a discussion between Puerto Ricans and Jewish people in Milwaukee. It was a wonderful thing. I was very honored to be able to do that. They put big pieces of paper, and the individuals were saying what their history was in the context of when they came to Milwaukee and under what conditions. And then we sat, and we had different groups with different people talking about the challenges and the opportunities, and talking about their experiences, good, bad, and ugly, and the whys. And then as we finished, there was a much better understanding of how people could collaborate, but how people could not. And one of the issues was Palestine. And the difference in terms of the kind of militant aspect of the Puerto Ricans' struggle, and then what happened, what's happening with Palestine. And they agreed to disagree. So when we are talking about Latinos and immigration, we, like any other group, have people that come here without papers, have people who come here to study. The University of Wisconsin has an incredible amount of people who come from different countries, including a number, and it's increasing, from Central and South America. Okay? And so either you have educational visas, you have temporary visas. We have people working among us that come with very limited visas because they have, and we were talking a little bit about, you know, they have things that the United States needs. And so there is a lot more flexibility with corporations, with the federal government, to bring in those folks through a speedy process, but they can only work for a certain time. And then you have people like myself, who have come here, got married, had children, got jobs. What I want to do right now is open it for a dialogue between you and I. Okay, and so use this time.
Well, I was talking about the different kinds of immigration that I see in terms of Latinos and others. You know, that when you come here for educational purposes, then there is a speed line in a way that, you know, with universities, working with universities for people come here to get education in particular ways. Or there is temporary visas that are given for particular reasons. And then you have, you know, this influx of people who may not be documented that are coming from South America, Central America, and North and Mexico. One of the interesting things is, you know, there's a saying that says you should be able to pull yourself by the bootstraps, but a lot of people don't have boots, you know. And so, you know, if everything is equal, then we can talk about true equality, but it isn't. And it, you know, the more the physical differences, the more people are not used to, you know, having an integrated environment, the more your tapes go up and assumptions are made and people react to you. I mean, I'm sure that that woman up north in this little town did not want to have the director of the Office of Civil Rights, you know, upset. But to her, I was a migrant worker coming for services, and therefore I don't speak Spanish, I mean English. And therefore she has to mouth the words. So, you know, and I tell people sometimes we discriminate without intent. It's kind of being pregnant by surprise, okay? It's surprise, but you're pregnant and you have to deal with it. And so, you know, one of the things that happens in Madison, for example, is that because we are urbanizing, we're seeing people's behavior, particularly kids in school, that is different. But that does not negate the fact that if they are not behaving appropriately, they should not be calling it. Okay? Because to me, to allow people to do things that are either illegal or discriminatory or they are wrong, is racist. Okay, if I put up with somebody, and I just finished doing some training for the cab company, for Union Cab, my guys, and I don't drive, so they take me everywhere. You know, but what I'm talking about is that there is a fairness and equity issue here. And when we are talking about the fact that people hire people who are not documented because of a number of reasons, some of which is that they know they don't have to pay equal wages. They know they don't have protection. One thing I'm gonna tell you, and I'm gonna take some other questions. Recently, I investigated a case. I was asked by an organization to help, to assist this Mexican woman that works together with her husband and son. This is in Madison, Wisconsin, by the way. In a large factory. where she was sexually assaulted by a Mexican supervisor. And when she went to complain to the owner, she was told that they couldn't do anything because he was a good supervisor. Okay? When I met with her, she said, "I'm concerned for my son and my husband who work under this same guy." Okay? When I talked to her and I explained to her, she had the right to file a police report. She had the right to go to equal rights. She had the right to file with the federal government because the protection is there whether you are documented or not. And I went with her to the police department. We filed a complaint. Went to Equal Rights Division. We filed a complaint. And their attorney subpoenaed me. And he was abrasive. He was disrespectful. He was challenging during the process. We were able to establish that not only has she been assaulted in the place of business, she was also discriminated by the owner in terms of addressing this issue properly. Of course, before the time the case was allocated in terms of what they needed to do, he had terminated the supervisor who had disappeared because he originally came from Chicago. This was 3 months ago. Okay, stuff happens here. And if we don't get fully involved with communities of color, if we don't look at what's happening in the schools, what's happening in social services, what's happening in terms of how folks are dealt with, if there are challenges or there are issues that come in, I can be here standing, talking about it, but you are not really being able to understand it, to be able to support and assist people that need it. And the importance of it for us in Madison is not to be just racially integrated, but culturally integrated as well. I think it's what we can do individually. You know, I mean, if we look at the bigger picture, we're looking at what ideally needs to happen. I happen, though, to feel very strongly that there are symbolic things that we do that don't necessarily reflect an intent and an action for integration. You know, we see it, for example, I did respectful dialogues with a purpose for the mayor's office some years ago.
And that was after study circles. I think study circles were wonderful for awareness purpose. But cultural competence is how you do it. Not being aware, not even being sensitive, but how do you go about doing what you need to do? In the context of work, I call it a performance issue. And so, you know, we have this symbolism. I love to go to Dane dances and dance for 5 straight hours with anybody, you know. I love to go to the events we have, like Baby, who, you know, has this beautiful festival and events. I work and I go into environments on a daily basis, whether it's custodians that I do training for and food service people in the public school system, or, you know, craft with their executive body, or St. Mary's with 62 managers being pulled out for a whole day to talk about how do we serve people of various cultures. So when people say we don't have time, I said, you make time for whatever is important. We always do that as human beings. And you see, sometimes kindness and best intentions are transferred in my tapes as arrogance, as you trying to imply that I don't know how to speak English. You know, I mean, so that's what I think is so important, that we have dialogues and not just presentations. Okay, because then you can ask the questions. We can develop the trust necessary to be able to say, would you be comfortable with this? You know, it's like I did training for principals in the school system, okay? 35 principals. And I asked, how do you benchmark cultural competency for teachers and social workers? What kinds of things do you ask that will tell you that they are culturally competent? And the response was, bilingualism. And I said, you know what? I know a bunch of people that are bilingual and are not culturally competent. Because I need to be culturally competent when I am working with people who are from Mexico, or they are from Central America, or they are from South America. Because the nuances are there. And I need to learn that. I need to be aware of that. And so, you know, when we talk about cultural competence, how many teachers in our school systems are trained to deal with the urban dynamics of language? For African American kids, for African American parents. And how many people think that if you went to Mexico for 2 weeks or 3 months, you can come back and be a bilingual social worker, even if you have the social worker certification? And so, you know, to me, all these layers need to be taken one by one. And you don't need to be an expert in everybody's culture, but you need to be an expert on your own, so you know what is that is different than what you need to learn about other cultures. And I think the wonderful thing, I was very privileged to be able to be in different countries throughout my life. I was raised in Peru, born in Brazil, raised in Peru, went to France, went to Morocco. And then when I got married, I came to the United States to Beloit, Wisconsin. And I'm going like, where is the city? And they go, you just went through it. You know? So I had to adjust to going from very large cities to a very small, beautiful little city with wonderful college. So it's not just the language, and it's not just, you know, this country is made out of people from many cultures, but there has been the connection between the European cultures. And there's the impact of European cultures. When I teach from an anthropological point of view, not racial. Racial comes into it as part of it. But Edward T. Hall, who's an anthropologist, and I really encourage you to read his works, it says that 98.7% of anything in this country that's organized is linear, single response, yes or no, and time limited. Think about it. Think what happens when you have people who are monolingual, not in English. And you have to bring a translator when you provide the service, which takes more time and not exactly 47.3 minutes per client. Think about what happens when you actually are dealing with people from different cultures, not just language, but cultures. And you have to adjust what you do and who you are to that. It's a natural challenge. And then if we have racist tendencies, we, because every individual can be a racist, regardless of race. Okay. If we have those tendencies, we immediately shut down if we see anything that's different. I'll be around for a little while, so okay. You can come up and we can talk.
Okay, thanks you. So much.
Thank you.
our closing words today. My struggle is for recognition, acceptance, and inclusion, as well as against racism, sexism, and the dominant male society, which never expected much from me, but still did not allow my voice to be heard. That is from Sarita Martinez. She's a Puerto Rican artist, the creator of Verdadism art style, painting juxtaposed with written social commentaries. And I included her website there. So take this home and look up her site. It's actually quite good.